I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. And today, we're headed out for some Venezuelan food. There's a cozy little restaurant called Coffee for Breakfast in North Hollywood. It's right on busy Burbank Boulevard by the 170 freeway. It's a far cry from Caracas. In Venezuela, the economy has collapsed. There are widespread food shortages, the power system is breaking down, and there are violent protests and a struggle for power.
It's not easy to leave a country when it's falling apart. It's not easy to go out and eat when you know that people in Venezuela is starving. There's people eating from garbage. My name is Ana Frisina.
Mi nombre es Jenny Gomez.
And we are at Coffee for Breakfast.
Ana and her mother Jenny opened this restaurant a couple of years ago, and they spoke to KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb, who's here with me right now. Hi, Benjamin.
Hello, Steve.
So tell us the latest in Venezuela, because there's so much going on over there.
Yeah, a lot has transpired in the last week or so. The opposition leader, Juan Guaido, who's also called himself the interim president, he appeared last week outside of an Air Force base in Caracas, the capital of Venezuela, with another jailed opposition leader. He was calling on the military to rise up against the regime of Nicolas Maduro, and that led to some violent protests all across the country. The major issue is economics. Inflation, Steve, in that country, in Venezuela, more than 1,000,000%. The money is really worth nothing. And if you couple that with sanctions from the U.S., it's kind of created a really horrible situation for the Venezuelan economy. And probably the most basic issue is access to food in Venezuela.
So that gets us to where we are today, of course, Ana and Jenny. Is that what brought their families to Los Angeles?
Yeah, those issues are definitely on their minds, especially that one I just mentioned, access to food. And that was the entree, so to speak, when I spent an evening eating and talking politics with Ana, Jenny, and their family at Coffee for Breakfast. Both Ana and Jenny have been in the U.S. for the past several years and are both seeking political asylum, but have a lot of pride for their culture and their home country. And of course, as with most nations, that pride extends to their food.
Vamos a hacer una empanadita de carne. Mira, qué rico. Mira cómo huele. Puro maíz.
Maíz.
Puro maíz. Maíz rico, fresco.
This is one of the favorites here in the restaurant, the cachapa. I think it's because the flavor, it's really, I don't know, it makes a good combination with the cheese. Because the corn is really, really sweet, and the cheese makes it like a really perfect balance. That's what I think.
I'm sitting here, a full plate of food. We've got quichapas, we've got arepas, we've got empanadas. It's a big spread of food, but right now in Venezuela, there are lots of people that can't have food. Ahora en Venezuela, hay un montón de gente que no puede comer nada.
Bueno. Me da mucha rabia cuando la gente bota la comida.
And she feels really angry when people throw away the food.
Porque en mi país muchos no comen, no comen nada.
Because in our country, a lot of people is not able to eat what we're eating here.
Mueren desnutridos, van al colegio sin comer.
They go to the school without eating and they are dying of malnutrition.
Y sus padres se desmayan yendo a trabajar.
And in Venezuela, the parents work too hard and they don't have the money to buy the food because the money is not enough.
Es muy triste que países ricos caigan en miseria. El comunismo tiene el poder de cualquier país próspero y maravilloso queda en miseria y en ruinas. Y los que ya tuvimos esa experiencia, tenemos que enseñarnos a nuestros hijos de que eso no puede volver a suceder.
My mom says that communism brings poverty and disaster to your country. So our duty as Venezuelans here is that we have to speak about this. We have to make people know what is happening in our country because no matter how rich your country is or how good it is in politics, as soon as a communist takes the power, he will destroy everything that's around him. And I'm saying this because I come from a country where communism failed and took all of my country to poverty and suffering.
At nights, when you guys go home after you've worked here all day,
Do you guys ever talk about what's happening at home? Do you guys watch the news or do you talk amongst yourselves?
En casa, en el trabajo, todo el día, de la mañana a la noche estoy.
She's on Twitter every day, all day, and as soon as she gets home, she watches the news. People think that because we left our country, we completely forget about that, but we cry at night because our country is falling apart, but here we have to work hard, we have to smile, we have to look happy. But it's not easy to leave a country when it's falling apart. It's not easy for us to buy a car when we know that in Venezuela we have friends that they cannot have a car because they could get killed or you don't have the money to buy the car. I know these examples sound a little bit superficial, but that's what you normally do in a country. You don't make a line to buy chicken, but in Venezuela you do.
No, come on.
No, you can take, because this is really freshly okay. made. So
ahora,
take it.
Yeah, ahora comer.
Comer. Very good.
Si se lo quiere llevar a casa, se lo.
Okay, aquí tenemos
una arepita.
Esto tú lo pones en el microondas un poquitito y ya.
Wow.
I know, it's really good, right? Mm.
Delicioso, gracias.
Ajá. Uh-huh. Sí,
señor.
No, llévatelo para que lo pruebe tu esposa.
Ah, ok, gracias.
No, no se preocupe.
Pero mi esposa no come carne, eso todo para mí.
Ah, ok. Okay. Mejor aún.
Más te queda.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve, if you think it's hard running a restaurant here in Los Angeles, imagine what it's like back in Venezuela.
Yeah, I mean, power outages going on there, food shortages, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, we've got a buddy in the city of Trujillo in Venezuela. It's an inland city in the western part of the country near the border with Colombia. And he talked to some restaurant owners there about what they're dealing with. And he sent us some tape. Here's Yusmeri Castellanos. She runs a coffee shop in Trujillo.
Hay ciertos rubros que,
she says she basically has to wake up at dawn to get some of the things that she needs for her coffee shop. The government controls the transportation of many food products, and so if you're shipping it around, that's illegal. It's also legal for her to have, for example, a certain amount of flour in her warehouse. And the reason, Steve, is because the government could say you are selling those things on the black market, making a profit, which is illegal.
So what about access to food, then?
It's also a major issue. Rodrigo Vasquez runs an Italian restaurant in Trujillo. It serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Lo que nos ha costado, por ejemplo, lo que es aceitunas negras, las anchoas, dependiendo de la temporada, champiñones.
He says he can't get things like black olives, he can't get anchovies, there are days he can't get mushrooms, and if there's inflation, that determines whether he can buy beef or chicken. And he says if you can't have that, you got to go to the black market, or else you don't have a restaurant.
So aside from all those problems, Benjamin, what other problems do these restaurants, these food servers have?
Well, we talked about this earlier, but one of the big issues is power, access to power, and often there are rolling power outages that span the entire country, and people just can't turn on the lights. They can't turn on their appliances.
Does Rodrigo have an exit strategy? I mean, does he plan on leaving?
He doesn't. And that's a similar reaction from a number of people that live in the town of Trujillo, including a woman named Rafaela. She did not give us her last name out of fear of the government. She has a pastry shop in the town, and here's what she has to say.
No lo he pensado porque yo confío y apuesto a que mi país va a salir adelante.
So she says she doesn't think of leaving as many others have, but she does think it can be a good idea for younger people. However, for her, she's going to stay and she's going to fight for her country.
Tenemos que seguir luchando por Venezuela.
But there's so much going on in Venezuela, Benjamin. She's optimistic. She thinks that things can turn around.
She is, and a lot of Venezuelans are optimistic because of the stance of the Trump administration and the rhetoric of the president. Trump and a dozen other nations have recognized the opposition leader, Juan Guaido. And here in Los Angeles, Anna and Jenny, they also really appreciate that. And they appreciate Trump's leadership on the issue of Venezuela.
Bueno, honestamente, si Trump ha sido el único presidente que ha tomado una determinación fuerte.
She's saying that Donald Trump has had a really strong opinion about what is happening in Venezuela, and if there was another president, for example, a Democrat, this wasn't happening.
I love you, Trump.
She's saying that she really likes Donald Trump, but it's because this is really hard for us to speak because we know that Donald Trump's opinion in the U.S. is not the best one.
Porque él es fuerte en decidido.
She's saying that he's really determined. He's really determined to...
Está decidido.
He's really determined to defend the democracy.
And that word, Steve, determined, was a word that we actually also heard in Venezuela from the cafe owners that we spoke with. Determined. They liked President Trump's determination.
KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. By the way, a special shout out to Jose Antonio Ocanto Ramirez, who recorded those interviews for us inside Venezuela in the town of Trujillo. And if you want a glimpse of life in Venezuela right now, check out the Twitter hashtag #SinLuz. That's SINLUZ. Well, for decades, Latinos have mostly supported Democrats in greater LA and pretty much across the country. So you might be surprised in that story by the Venezuelans we spoke with that their support is for Donald Trump. Mike Madrid is a Republican political strategist and an expert on Latino voting trends, and he's with me right now from Sacramento. Hi, Mike.
Hi, great to be with you.
You bet. We had that aha moment in the piece that we just heard with the Venezuelans announcing their support for President Trump. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me, but the understanding why, I think, is key to knowing why it's not surprising. You know, Latinos as a broad group, and of course it's very diverse within itself. Ideologically, there hasn't been a whole lot of consistency between, you know, country of origin, nationality, removal from the immigrant experience. But one common thread has, I think, made inroads by Republicans kind of insurmountable to the Latino vote, and that is they do respond to an attack on the community. What we're seeing with this Venezuelan experience is much more a connection between other immigrant groups that have come here in the past that have shared similar histories, most notably the Cubans and the Vietnamese, two racial and ethnic groups, really the only two racial and ethnic groups in the history of this country who have come here and voted Republican within the first generation. But those are ideological responses, and they are unique. It's not something that we're finding with Venezuelans that are somehow going, hey, maybe there's an odd Republican strain or a Trump strain in there that we need to kind of manage. It's really in response to the collapse of this kind of strong dictatorship and leftist government, which is not unlike what we saw with Cubans and the Vietnamese.
Well, the thing about politics is you should know your opposition. And on the Democratic side, obviously, there is a lot of support among Latinos in this country, certainly in Southern California. Do you know the numbers, how solidly Latinos swing Democratic?
19% of Latinos are registered as Republicans, which is not a strong number. And that's compounding very quickly in the wrong direction for Republicans. Latinos tend to vote 80% plus for the Democrats. But I do think it is an important distinction, again, having looked at this for 25 years, that doesn't mean that 80% of Latinos support Democrats. It means that they really feel that they've got no other choice. It's kind of the lesser of two evils decision that's being made. And we know that statistically because the no party preference vote, in other words, leaving both parties, is happening the highest in the most Latino concentrated districts. It's just in this type of hyper politicized environment where the community feels under attack by the Republicans, by the President of the United States, they're responding by voting for the Democratic alternative. That's very different than saying that they are, you know, Democrats through and through, and that's kind of how that they will vote in the future.
You mentioned you've been looking at this for 25 years, and I just did the math. 25 years takes us back to 1994, and something happened. Let me think here. Proposition 187 and former Governor Pete Wilson. The overall relationship between Latinos, obviously, and the GOP has not been very good in the years since. Prop 187 obviously excluded undocumented immigrants from being able to partake of many public benefits. It certainly hasn't gotten much better with President Trump's rhetoric as well. So what do you do? How do you fix that going forward?
Well, that's a great question. And again, I say the number 25 for a specific reason. It's because it still wakes me up in the middle of the night. that was when my political career began. And in the 25 years hence, you know, I've been studying changing the Republican Party, working on messaging with Latino voters, trying to reconcile these two very divergent groups, but with a lot of overlap. And just as we were starting to make progress as a party, You know, 4 or 5 years ago, Donald Trump kind of comes on the scene. You know, Pete Wilson 187 starts to disappear in the rearview mirror. Finally, I've got a blank canvas. I can start, you know, working on my life's work here. And then the Trump, Donald Trump kind of ends up winning the nomination and kind of sets me back.
Well, he began his campaign literally at Trump Tower calling some Mexicans rapists and, you know, not very nice people.
You know, and I happened to be in New York City at the day that that happened and kind of ruined a trip I was on with a girlfriend because immediately my phone blew up and I was ended up doing the whole vacation doing media around that. And of course, at the time, most of us thought it was an anomaly. There's always been this kind of ugly strain, which exists, frankly, on both sides of the aisle. It's not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party, but it's certainly been there. And it had never been a dominant part of the party, certainly in my time working with it. But it's undeniable that it has been a part of this populist nationalist strain, this America First strain, has always been there. It just in this extraordinary time upended the populist base, upended kind of the Republican establishment, and has become a dominant or certainly very significant force in the American right and the Republican Party.
Mike Madrid, a Republican political strategist, expert on Latino voting trends. Mike, thanks for your time.
Always great to be with you.
Coming up, the future of legal cannabis, where it is a part of an experience. Cannabis Resorts, next on Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Steve Chiatakis back with Greater LA. In December, the city of West Hollywood announced the approval of cannabis consumption or social lounges. And just last week, a company introduced plans to build a cannabis resort, a destination in downtown LA with cannabis-infused food and live music and a rooftop bar. As soon as later this year, a whole new category of restaurants and bars and clubs could be opening up all across Greater LA. Mona Holmes has been reporting on this for the website Eater LA, and she joins me right now. Hi, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
Destinations.
Yeah.
Resorts.
Yes, believe it.
Like an all-encompassing thing? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, these businesses, they're game changers. When they're finished, they'll have created an entirely new industry all throughout Southern California. And I'm calling it cannabis hospitality. So an example is a company that's called Eon. And they secured 3 different cannabis licenses in the city of West Hollywood. And what they're going to do is just picture a huge space where there's a place where you can actually buy it. But for the sake of this discussion, they'll also have a consumption lounge that allows people to smoke or vape or have edibles. But this one, there's a little bit of a health slant. And so people can have a cannabis-infused tea after they sit down and talk with a medical care professional about how to better take care of themselves. Yeah, I know, Steve.
Consultation.
Yes. There's another company called Budberry. But this one, the founder envisions a retail cannabis store, a consumption lounge, and a cafe. And then there's going to be a cannabis chef in an open kitchen that'll prepare macaroons, muffins, pastries during the day. And then in the transition to night, they'll just have cannabis infused beverages without alcohol, though. And then there's another one that you just mentioned in downtown, and it's supposed to be a resort, and it's from a company called Fell From Earth, and they'll have cannabis cuisine along with live music and a rooftop bar. And so they're thinking of something that's a little bit more upscale for their guests.
So how many are we talking about, like, going into the coming months?
In the coming months, I see definitely 2 of them opening up.
I think of coffee houses in Amsterdam when you're describing the stuff, right? Have you been to Amsterdam?
I have.
Yeah, and you've gone to one of the coffee houses. You go in, you grab a cup of joe, you smoke a little weed, And then you go explore the rest of ADAM. You go explore maybe the red light district, or you go to a bar. You go pub crawling or whatever. Is that what we're talking about here?
I think we're talking about 20 times the level of Amsterdam within
Los Angeles. Wow, 20 times.
They're not just hiring random people. These are actual chefs that have been working in the industry for a long time and infusing food with cannabis.
And by the way, we're calling it cannabis. We used to call it pot. We used to call it marijuana. Why cannabis?
Well, I've been, since I started covering this a year and a half ago, I've been corrected often. Pot is a slang term, so is weed. And the very commonly used term marijuana was taken from a Mexican tobacco plant and applied to cannabis to make it sound foreign and threatening. But cannabis is actually the name of the plant. And I agree with them. I believe that we should call it exactly what it is. A plant.
It gives it gravitas.
It does.
And maybe a sense of that it's not seedy like you would, no pun intended, like you would think, right?
I would think so too. And you know, this is a serious business. This is going to be a multi-billion dollar business of consumption lounges that are coming to Los Angeles. And so we should legitimize it. I mean, they've rebranded it. We might as well come along with them.
In all of that, Mona, you didn't mention the word alcohol.
I did not.
Why not?
There's a reason behind this, because it's not legal to do so in the state of California to combine anything related to cannabis and alcohol. Last year, Governor Brown signed Assembly Bill 2914, and that bill prohibits bars and restaurants from selling anything with alcohol and CBD and THC. Now, CBD is the, your audience might know, is the non-psychoactive component of cannabis. And even in 2015, it was incredibly easy to find CBD cocktails throughout Los Angeles. They were everywhere from West Hollywood's Gracias Madre to the Pattern Bar in downtown. And since he signed this law, they've pretty much all but disappeared from the map.
You were describing so many things that go on in these places, resorts, destinations, clubs, whatever they may be. And it's like, that's a lot of pot, a lot of cannabis. How do you not get out of there without being completely stoned?
I'll tell you what cannabis chefs have been telling me since I started covering this topic. And the 99.9% of them want people to come in and have this cannabis dinner where there will be 4 to 5 courses where people don't walk out of there completely stoned, or not walk out of there completely blatantly, ridiculously stoned. They're more interested in having people that have an experience that's more uplifting, is more of what they want, and to make it so that it doesn't turn into something that maybe is a little bit stereotypical of what people think stoners are.
Mona Holmes, a reporter for Eater LA. She covers a dining, bar, and food industry, now cannabis food industry, throughout Southern California. Mona, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for your support of public radio during our UnDrive pledge drive as we ask for your support in short increments. KCRW.com/join. So glad you're with us today. That's Greater LA for today. Tomorrow, off to a coffee shop that dishes out activism on Wilshire Boulevard. Special thanks to Jesse Hardman today for the help in our Venezuela segment. Phil Richards and Ray Guarna engineer and mix the show. Catherine Barnes is our producer. Sonia Geis is our managing editor. Christian Bordahl is our managing producer. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Hey, let's do it again tomorrow, shall we? That's Greater LA for today.